Your Honor.
Somebody who is married and he's put in a lot of money now as an investment, he figures he's going to be married for many years. Poor naive fellow, he puts in a few $100,000, sprinkler systems, new toppings, all kinds of land supports and everything. After a year in which he manages to get back 1% of his investment, he gets divorced. And now he says, look, you know, I'm leaving you with your field that's owned by his home. For heaven's sakes, I put in so much money, I deserve to get a little bit back on this, right? No. The din is, he could put in a lot and have taken out a very little. Or for that matter, he maybe put in very little and he's been eating for the past 30 years. And now the wife says, this is no good, Nick never did anything for the field. At least give me a little bit extra for all of the money that he's stolen from my property without investing in it. Doesn't matter. It's basically a wash. As long as he took something out of his field, that was the deal. He takes care of the field, and he's the one that gets the payros. If it works out to her advantage, good. Works out to his advantage, good. It's part of the risks that you take. In a case where he didn't get a darn thing out of the field, so let's say you only had a chance to invest in the field, and it's still pre Achila time, things haven't grown, a divorce comes a few months after they're married, he just put in a bunch of money into the field. So if Hotziva lo achal at all, then Yishava kama Hotzivito, then he should swear how much it was that he put into the field, and he's allowed to deduct that. Well, see, it doesn't mean mama, she could take everything, but because, I mean, she could say, who has to spend so much money, you jerk? You know, so if we're going to see that, we're going to limit it actually to the value of the shevach of the field. In other words, if the price of the field has gone up because of his investment, so that it went up the full amount, fine, you can get it out, but generally that doesn't happen. You put in a lot of money in something, but a buyer is only going to give you maybe 10 cents on the dollar of what you invested, which is why it's not good to fix up a house before you sell it, generally. So the same thing is true over here. So obviously we're not going to pay out more than she's lemaisa getting in terms of shevach for the deal. It's limited, whatever is less. But then he has to be nishba, how much it is that he paid, and that's the maximum that he can take. Now, you said that it's a wash, but it's only a wash if he ate kima. If he didn't eat anything, doesn't count, right? I mean, how much is kima? I mean, what are we talking about? Are we talking about a year's worth of payros? Are we talking about a meal? How much is kima? Omer Vasi, kima is kima. Anything. Afilu grogeret achat. I don't care if he basically ate one dried fig. To me, it's the same thing. The point over here is, if he ate it derech kavod, he sat down and he ate like a mensch. It wasn't just like he was a passerby, he picks a date off of a tree and he eats it. I mean, that's not called the achil of a baal. But if he took it as if it was his and he sat down and had a meal with it, that's it. He already ate now from this date field, and that's it. He put in money, too bad. Omar, Rabbi Abba, Amre Beirav, Afilu Shigra de Tamre. Forget about eating a grogeret. Even if you ate some date spread, so you ground them up. I mean, that's really a cheap kind of thing, you know, where you put it on your bread and so on. And you press, I'm sorry, pressed is what I mean, pressed into, normally we press figs, but it's a sort of a cheap kind of way of preserving the dates. You press them all down together and you make a cake sort of thing out of it. That's also called the same thing. It's called achila, and don't think that that's not called derech kavod. Boy Rav Bibi, how about chuftz at the tamri? How about if it's actually just the leftovers of the beer that you make out of the dates? In those days, they use dates for beer. And just like you have in any beer, you have the leftovers after you strain. When you make wine, you have the lees at the bottom of the wine. The same thing in beer, you have the leftovers. Of course, they're not very chashev because they've already been used up. We've drawn the sugars and nourishment out of them. But nonetheless, this is used as a food. Is that considered to be enough of a covet, that are covet, that it's chashev, to be kima or not? Take it. Okay, you say that as long as he eats derech kavod, then even kima would mean even grogeret achad. Tell me something. What about if he didn't eat derech kavod? I mean, it certainly doesn't mean if he harvested the whole field and didn't eat derech kavod, it doesn't count at all. I mean, you're saying that kima would be defined as any little bit if it was derech kavod. But how about if it's not derech kavod? What would be the amount that you would have to eat in order for it to be considered a wash?
Well,
benefit. Benefit. If there's mamish parent. Yeah, exactly. So chadamar b'ki iser, v'chadamar b'ki dinner. One says even the value of an iser, but that's a lot more than one gogera. The other one says it has to be a whole dinner. Amre dayane kubadisa. Ovad Rav Yehuda uvda. Rav Yehuda took it a step further. Rav Yehuda said, okay, you've been talking about eating in terms of personal eating. That's what we've been discussing over here. How about if he takes some twigs out of the leftovers of the field and he feeds it to his pet elephant? How about that? I mean, certainly that's not very much of an achila. So l'maisa, aloka l'maisa, Rav Yehuda Paskin, it was considered to be achila when all he had done was fed chavilei zmarot to his pet elephant. And that's also, even though it's not something a human being can even eat, right? And it's called elephant food, literally. I'm not joking. This is called ma'achal pilim. But nonetheless, he feeds this to his animal and then divorces his wife. That's called benefiting from the field. And that's efficient. So this is it's not the tzura. At this point, once it has that value, it's not the tzura of the achila that's important.
Is this covered?
No, this is in the event that it's not there covered, what is it considered to be? Rav Yehuda l'tayne. And this is Rav Yehuda l'shitasei, who basically accepts any type of achila as considered to be an act of ownership, and that's the point over here, he acted like an owner. Where is the other area where it's very important to define whether someone has been acting as an owner? In a case where someone has a chazaka on a field. So the din of a chazaka is like this. Normally when I buy a field, real estate doesn't transfer hands just because I happen to be the one in the tractor. Because the owner who was there before could come along and say, okay, you can leave the tractor now, I want my field back. And what are you talking about? I bought the field from you. What are you, crazy? Really, he says to me, where's your contract? So if I don't have a contract, the fact that I happen to be physically present at the field means absolutely nothing in real estate. I need to be able to prove that I'm the owner. However, after 3 years in which nobody said a word about my using this field, and I've been eating the pears of this field for 3 years, I can say to the guy, I didn't keep my contract. You never said a word about it. Don't come along all of a sudden. I got witnesses that I've been here for 3 years acting as an owner. I no longer have to present my contract. And that's called a chazaka on real estate. But in order for me to have such a chazaka, I need to actually be able to show that I've been eating the field. So there, the definition of eating is similar to the definition of a year. Show us that you're acting as a baal. In this case, the baal of the isha who has this field. In this case, the baal of the sada. So Rabbi Yehuda happens to hold, when it comes to the inyanim of proving ba'alut on a sada, that it doesn't take very much to show an act of achila. So Rabbi Yehuda says over there that in a case where a person was eating 3 years, but it was orla during that time. So over there, the only use that you get out of the field is twigs. Because you can't eat any fruit. The twigs aren't usher, but the fruit is usher. So therefore, the owner, you would think, could say, "Ah, get out of here. You weren't acting as an owner. I have no interest in twigs. A guy wants to clear my field out of twigs and feed it to his pet elephant. That's his problem. I'm supposed to go to court and say this guy is stealing my twigs." So you might have thought that that's not a good chazaka. Comes along Rav Yehuda to say, even feeding your pet elephant is good chazaka. That's the part that's nogea exactly this case. Or, for that matter, if he eats it during a time in which he's eating it as shvius. So there, I mean, it's hefker. Or it was basically the plants in the field were all kilayim. So all that is useful over there is the field, the things that are not edible. So that doesn't become usher. Nonetheless, but then it would be hefker to anybody. Nonetheless, harezer chazoka. It's called part of the shalosh shanim, even though one of the years was shviyas. You see, but you only ate it for 2 years. Shviyas, anybody could have been in there. Nonetheless, Rav Yehuda holds it's a chazoka. So in the same way that it's a chazoka in terms of proving that I was eating the field when it comes to the pet elephant for dinim of chazoka, this is Rav Yehuda l'shitasa. So too, when it comes to a husband who's eating his wife's field, it's considered to be, he was ocha, even though it was kima. It was only for his pet elephant. That's also considered to be achilas kima. Omer Yaakov, Omer Fista, Hamotzi Otzaot, Hamotzei Ishto Kitana. There's a whole different ballgame. When a guy is married to a Kitana, who is a Yesema? Over there, he knows that he's not married to Midi Raisa. What difference does it make then? Big difference. Because suppose he now invests in the field, and she walks off. She decides, okay, I don't like you. Now that I've exhausted your bank account, and you've put it all into my field, I think I'll go back to daddy and keep my field. So he's going to be very reluctant to put in any money in this field. So basically, it's going to be one of these 90s, you know, take a company and use it all up. So he'll marry the Katana. He's got a, what was it called? Raiders. Yeah. So it's like, there's another word though for the fast using it up and then killing the company. But okay, so that's what he'll do. He'll marry the Ketama. He's got a chance to get Paris out of the field. He's not going to invest in the field. So he'll just keep, he'll deplete the property. Won't you? Therefore, we can't make the normal takana of Kima versus what it is that he's put in. Generally, a guy's in a marriage. He knows it's up to him. I mean, he wants to invest in the field. It's because he's prepared to invest in the marriage. But over here with the Ketana, what is he going to do to invest in the marriage? If she decides one thing, she gets mad at him and walks away. Therefore, we had to make a different arrangement in order to ensure that a husband who's married to Ketana will be willing to take risks. So we had to work out a way that he could get back some of what it is that he's risked when he invests the money. So this is what the Gemara is discussing now. What would be the halacha of somebody who went and was motzi hotzaot al yechzei ishto ketana? The halacha over there is that we treat him as if he was motzi al yechzei acher. If she walks out and is mima'enet, the halacha would be over there that we treat him like an oris. A guy who walks into somebody else's field, where we know, even though the Baal didn't appoint him, we know that this sada was aimed to be taken, and every year it's always been cared for. And this guy walks along, and he hears the owner was sick, and he wants to be a good guy. And he goes, and he starts working the guy's field without permission. So then the owner can't say to him, hey, who asked you to work my field? I'm not going to pay you anything. The din is, in that case, even though you went into Shalom Bereshus, although, by the way, the Girsa, the Rif of the Rambam here, is Acher Bereshus, which has a different din. But the halacha over there is that if it's a sada that is Omedes anyway for Zriya, so he gets, it's called Yadola Tachtana, he gets the lesser of either what it is that he's put in, or what it is that would be the norm to pay a sharecropper. So in this case, we treat a person who invested in a Ketana's field exactly the same way we would treat somebody who's stam invested in another guy's field. He's not going to be less than that. And the reason, my time up, the reason we treat it this way, instead of calling it a wash, the way we do with an isha who is a gedela, my time up, is because we don't want him running in and raiding the field, basically, thinking that any moment now she could walk out on me and I won't be able to get back a penny. So why should I put in a sprinkler system that's going to cost me $10,000? Tomorrow she can walk out and I won't have a claim. Therefore, we made the halacha similar to an investment in which a person does have a claim. So it's a yod ha'alatach claim, but nonetheless, at least he can get back. So he doesn't feel he's taking such a tremendous risk in helping out the field for the future. There was a woman who got a Yerusha that was worth 400 zuz, but it was far away in a town called Bechuzoi. And now, her husband went ahead and he traveled to Beit Huzai, which cost him a lot of money, in order to collect what it was that had fallen to her Yerusha. So he went. He's not a very smart guy. He spent 600 zuz getting the money in Beit Huzai, which is 400 zuz. But, you know, it was a matter of principle. Rich, you know all about that. Yeah. You can get a Yerusha, all right. It just costs you three times what the Yerusha is worth, but you proved your point. No. So he goes now. Yeah. He goes now and he collects now the 600 zuz. So I think Arba Mea, he's carrying these 400 zuz from his wife. And he finally arrives near home and he needs to take a taxi to the house. It turns out he's completely run out of cash. He used up every penny that he had to bring back the stuff from the Bechuzoi. So he figures, okay, so what's my problem? I'll take a buck out of the money that I picked up over there and I'll use it for the cab. So he goes ahead, it's lechad zuza. He takes that one zuz, shokominai, and wouldn't you know, when he comes home, his wife says, you are an idiot, spending 600 zuz to get me 400. I want a divorce. So they end up getting divorced. So now he wants his money back for all the trouble that he took to go pick up her money. So atalakami to Rabami, they come to Rabami. Omar alayhi, Rabami says, look, seems to me that this is the case of the Mishnah. It's a wash, you know. You put in money to get the money. And, you know, mashal tzi, mashal halakal. Now, by the way, this strikes me as being a little bit crazy. I mean, what's the chance to talk about Shevach? All he had was Hepsit. Right? I mean, where's the Shevach? Subtract the 600 from the 400, and you're left with minus 200. So what do I understand? What he was mashbiach? How do we measure Shevach in such a case? So the lechora, the only way, I mean, there's other approaches, but the most reasonable approach, lechora, is that we measure the shevach in terms of the difference of the value of the 400 zuz here or in Bechuzai. So in other words, if somebody says, look, what would it be worth to me to have these zoos accessible here in Mechuza instead of having to go to get Bechuzai? That difference is the shevach. What he invested, he may be an idiot and invested $100,000 in a sprinkler system for a field that he only made 10 extra dollars this year. Fine. That's like every case where you invest and you create shevach. But there is shevach. Now, the question is, when this person ate to pay the taxi cab, he ate one zuz, right? Did he eat from the shevach? Or did he basically take her karen? The chari, he took her karen. So the Rabbanon said to Rabbani, now, wait a minute. The whole din of its being a wash is where the investment creates payers. He eats from those payers. So then it's a wash. Suppose he doesn't eat payers at all, and instead he takes the actual capital. That wasn't his. That's not considered to be a wash. That wasn't the Swiss for him. So in this case, say the Rabbanan to Rabbami, where do we say in the Mishnah that it's a wash, that if he had payrot, so then he has to not deduct, but rather completely wash out his investment versus what he got out of the payrot? That's only if he had payrot. But he didn't eat payrot over here. But in this case, the guy is eating the actual keren, and all he had over here was the rotza'ai. Where in the world is he eating pears? He should be able to sue her. He stole it from the Karen. He took it from the Karen. So, maybe it was owed him from the Karen, but he certainly didn't get any pleasure from the pears. Oh, said Rabbami, if that's the case, if Cain havelei hotzi velo achal, then on the contrary, this is a case in the Sefer of the Mishnah, where the person invested, didn't get anything back. If that's the case, yishavaka mahotzi v'yito, then this fits into the psak of the Sefer of the Mishnah, which is that he swears and takes. What he can take is basically the difference between the shevach. Maybe it's worth $10 more than it was before because of their bank charges or whatever would have been involved. And that he can, that much he can get back. Now, the Mishnah says, yishavaka mahotzi v'yito, he should swear how much he had put out, and then he's able to get that back. Omer Abasi, now wait, just hold on a minute. I mean, he can't, if he made an investment that was unreasonable, he can't get back more than the actual added value to the property. So v'hu, when we say that he can swear and get back, that's only v'hu shiyei sheva k'neged otza'ah. That's only if the property value was enhanced to the same amount that he's being tovea in his expense to enhance that value. Itchy. What's doing, man? He just came back from a beautiful vacation. Blue skies. Blue water. 500 channels on your...
Nothing.
Yeah. Okay, so when Rabasi said that, what was he saying that is not the case? In other words, Lamayovata. When does he have to swear when the shevach is connected to the tzah? Or is he saying, when does it help to swear? What exactly does he mean? Well, Rabbi, what he means is this. She'ima yashevach yeter ala hotza'ah, notel et hotza'ah below shavua. That if we're all agreed that, boy, he enhanced this property to the tune of $500,000, and it only cost him $10,000, and that's all he wants. Over there, it's only fair that he should be able to collect. I mean, he's done a great thing for his wife. Let him at least get back his $10,000, not make him swear in Bezdin. I mean, after all, she's coming out ahead no matter what. Omer Le Rava says, Rava, well, it sounds on the surface like a good deal, but it isn't a very good deal. Because in Cain Atila Rume, what you're doing is, you're giving him an option, basically, to cheat her out of money. Because all he has to do is, he'll say, what's the difference what I put in? Let's analyze what the added market value is. I'll get an assessment. He gets an assessment, added market value is $150,000. Cost him, Lamaisa, $10,000, right? He's not going to swear falsely. So he says, you know what? It cost me only $140,000. And you're getting a property of $150,000. So I'll bring a nice guy, give me my $140,000. I mean, that's basically what you're doing. You're putting into his hand a weapon to cheat his wife out of money. Lamaisa only cost him $10,000. So you're going to take off the shvua. He's going to say whatever he wants. And, you know, he'll rationalize it. My God, the pain she's put me through with this marriage is easily worth $130,000. Well, add that to the bill for mental anguish.
Why don't you take it to just spend it all and then go through things?
Yeah, that's right. So that can't be what Rabasi means, says Rava. It doesn't make any sense. Elam Rava, you're saying that Rabasi was coming to make life easier on the Baal, that he does not have to swear in a case where it was less than the Sheva. I say the opposite is true, that the whole point that Rabasi was making here is to make life more difficult for the Baal. And what he's saying is that Hu Sheyesh Shevach Keneged Hotza'ah means that if the Hotza'ah was more than a Shevach, he has no right to be Toveyet even with a Shvuah. That's the point. What Rabasi is saying is that we're going to limit the amount that he can recover of his investment. So if he claims that he put in $100,000 to this thing, and he swears he put in $100,000, but the assessor says the property value only went up by $10,000, he cannot reclaim more than $10,000. That's all that Rabasi is saying. But whatever he's claiming, it has to be b'shvuah. I don't care if it's more or less. We're certainly not going to let him off the shvuah. So therefore, what he's saying, it says, Ravashi, maitah hotza'ah yitera la shevach, ein lo ela hotza'ah, he only has the shira shevach, the amount of the hotza'ah, which equals the amount of the enhanced value, but even that, of course, is bishvuata. Anything that he's going to get in any direction is always going to be with the Iboilo. Question. Interesting question. Actually, a fabulously interesting question. Listen to this question. A guy is married, and he's lazy. Maybe he doesn't know anything about farming. We'll see that it makes a difference. He takes a sharecropper. He says to the sharecropper, listen, buddy, I don't want to work this field, but all of the pears are mine. So what I'd like you to do is have a normal sharecropper agreement with me. You work the land. The guy says, what do you mean? But who owns the land? He says, what's the difference who owns the land? I'm responsible for the land. You work the land, and I'll give you a normal deal. Sharecropper gets 50%, you'll get 50%. Guy puts in the pears. Guy puts in a year's work. He comes to collect, and it turns out that the owner has divorced his wife. He thought the owner. So he comes to the woman and he says, you know, I've been working this. She says, I don't know. Who are you? I'm the artist. That guy, I mean, my ex, he didn't own this field. He couldn't make any deal with you. So as far as his rights to the pears are concerned, he lost those rights because he gave me a divorce. What happens to the poor artist? That's an interesting case. So ask the Gemara like this. What would be the din in a case where the Baal went ahead? He put sharecropper in his place. No. Then he gets divorced. What is the arrangement that is actually being made with the sharecropper? Adaita the Baal Nachit. Did he make a deal with the husband? And then husband gone, deal gone? Is that it? So, istalik le Baal, istalik luhu. When he's gone, the husband's gone, the poor artist is basically left hanging. He made a deal with the wrong guy. Or do we say, O Dilma, Adaite the Ara Nochit. The Ara ki kaime, le arise kaime. Or do we say that when he went down, he had no interest in, it happened to be the Baal. He knew that the Baal is not necessarily the owner of the land, but he knew that this property would have required an artist to take care of it no matter what. And that would be true as far as the woman is concerned. So he went ahead, he shouldn't be worse than a guy that went ahead and took care of somebody else's property. I mean, we certainly can't say you don't get anything. It's the same as an artist that would be in any case. A field was aimed for arisim, and a guy went and he improved it. So we said before that he gets the normal payment of an artist if it was aimed for that purpose. So what is the halacha in this case? Maskefal Rafa Berufchana, I didn't even like the way you phrased it. What exactly did you mean? In the first part, you're saying in the first part we're going to consider it as if he gets nothing because the Baal gets nothing. I mean, I don't understand what the... I could see Toots Duggan to say, the first tzav should say he's like an oris without rishos, which yadola tachtona. And the second tzav would say that since Lamaisa he's doing what the Baal is supposed to be doing for the woman, So he takes the place of the ball for the woman, and the woman owes him. And I don't see what's the side to say he doesn't get anything. I mean, why is he worse than a guy who went down without rishos? The woman is saying, I don't know who you are. So he should say, or his lawyer should say, what's the difference whether you know who I was? Suppose I never met your husband. Suppose I had walked into this field and felt bad to see it lying fallow, knowing that it had always been well tended. And I went in there and I took care of it. You would have been able to tell me you don't know me? No. It's not worse than that, is it? So what kind of svara would it be to say, why is this any different than a guy who goes into somebody else's field and he goes and he plants it without permission, that the halacha is over there, shaminlo, v'yadola tachtona. We estimate now the shevach, and he gets whatever is less, the shevach, or whatever it cost him to create that shevach. So why? But to say that he goes out without anything because he was dependent on the Baal? Well, explain that to me. So we told Rav Chana, there's a big difference. Because hatam leke inish the Torah, hake ikabal the Torah. Wait, there is a big difference. In a case where a guy walks into a field that he sees lying fallow. So over there, nobody's going to take care of it and he's not taking care of it. Over here, the woman could say, you know that lazy good-for-nothing bum that they called my husband? Well, he was the guy that was going to take care of this field. If he couldn't take care of this field, then he should have paid somebody to take care of this field. But this is not a case where a field was lying fallow. This is a case where there was a person who had already been in charge of the field because of my ketubah. He was standing there. You want to deal with him, whatever deal he made with you, please go talk to him about it. Masha'in came where you come in and it has to do directly with me. And you take care of a field that otherwise wouldn't have been cared for. Enochinami, I would have paid you whatever I would have paid any artist that would have come in, except that you're Allah Tartuna. But in this case, talk to my husband. He's the no good thing that was supposed to be taking care of the field. Therefore, it's even worse than this normal case. Anyway, but fine, now I understand the question, but what's the bottom line? My Haviela, what in fact is the halach in this case? Amar Ravuna Breder of Yeshua. Basically, it depends on the context. You're saying that no good-for-nothing guy that's called my husband was supposed to take it. Well, the husband doesn't know anything about farming. Right? So, chazina, what we have to see is what the case was. If the Baal himself was indeed capable of dealing with this field, and he knew how to deal with this field, he himself is osik in this business, then lamaisa, the aris, cannot be looked at as having mercy on this field lying fallow. He made a deal with the Baal is gone, the aris is gone. But if the Baal basically wouldn't have been able to deal with this field on his own anyway, which means that the land was sitting here crying out for an aris, it doesn't make any nafkamina in that case that the Baal happens to be the one who found the aris. It's not going to be worse than if the aris found himself. So it'll still be the same. As shamin l'aviyado ala tachton. In that case, ibal lav arisu, ara la arise kaimi. The ara is waiting with his hands wide open to embrace whatever aris is going to come along.
There's no prophets on the aris.
Who says this? No. In the event that there was no sheva. It's not prophet, it's sheva. There's a big difference.
No,
there's two separate cases here. Don't get confused. There's a case where it's a field of tvua, where we analyze produce. It's talking about over here where he was noteya. We're talking about over here an investment. An investment would be like you plant trees. That's a long-term investment. It was the son of Zayn from the tia. There we analyze the shevach. How much added value is there to the property? And that's what we're talking about here. If it's a property that was made for trees. Let's say that it had been trees all the time. Now these trees have died. Now he's going to come and replace them. Ibarlo. We spoke earlier, when we first introduced the parak, about the nature of the schus that the husband has for the peros. And we pointed out that it does not seem to be a typical monetary advantage that he has, because otherwise the idea of his not getting peri-peros is a little ridiculous. I mean, it says, what's nafkamina, peros, peri-peros. So clearly it's a certain type of right specifically for eating, for utilizing. How far does that right extend, gentlemen? Does it give him specific financial interest in the property? So that, let us say, that he wishes to sell the property for the rights of produce. Right? That's called selling a field for its peyrot.
Celsius rights to the parents?
Yes. Let's say I own a property. Now, if I own a property, I can make a deal with somebody, and I could say, look, I want to sell you this property. Not that you should own it, but rather that you should own the rights to using it. And whatever it produces will be yours. You pay me cash up front, and I'm paying you, you pay me maybe it's 5% of the value of the property per year, and you can do whatever you want with the property. You can make $100 million on it. I have no
interest. It's a rental.
No, it's much more than that. Because it gives you specific, it's really not our sugya now, but it's more than a rental because you have actually a lien on the property for its use of payers. So there's differences between that and rental. But the question is whether a Baal has those rights, and he can say, I'm like a guy who purchased those rights. Now, if I, that guy who purchased the rights from the original owner, I wanted to sell it to somebody else, I have no problem. I can do that. I can tell the guy, I paid this guy $100,000. I've been making $500,000 a year. So I'll make a deal with you, cut a deal with you. You give me $300,000, and I'll sell you the rights to this field for its payers. I can do that. Because whatever I own, Richie, I'm begging you. It's so hard to speak to somebody. I mean, imagine sitting across a table with your lover and falling asleep. This is what learning is all about. This is Yalat Chaim. Good heavens. I'm going to have to speak to Mika about this. How about another cough? See, I spoke to her, she called. The metabolism racing, okay. So the question over here, does the husband's right to eat peirot equal a kinyan in the field for the peirot? If it does, he should be able to sell it to a stranger. Can a husband go, this guy basically just wants money to blow on his whiskey, right? So he figures, why do I got to be a friar? Work all year on the field, have money coming in. I'll sell it to somebody who'll do the work. I'll make right now $10,000. With those $10,000, I can be in whiskey all year. Great. But I mean, if Lamaisa, we gave him the rights, maybe he can do that. So this is our question. Baal shemachar karka leperot mav. Mi'amrinan ma'idekoni akne? Do we say, look, whatever he was kone, as a result of the rights that were given to him in the Ketubah, he can sell, and that's what he's done. Or do we say, no, the Rabbanan did not give him financial rights. The Rabbanan gave him actual rights. He can't translate it into cash. It's like those coupons. This coupon's cash value is 1/20th of a mil. That's his cash value. He's got no cash value, basically. But Lamaisa entitles him to something that's worth a lot of money. And the reason for the Dilma Kitakina, the Rabbanan Peirot Baal, maybe the reason that we give him these Peirot is Mishum Rafa Beta. What we want is that a husband should feel that it's worthwhile for him to take over a wife's field, build them up, invest in them, bring in food, tomatoes, cucumbers, bread, whatever it, and the house is a living home. Filled with money coming in, payers coming in, and it's a whole different kind of home. It's not a financial right to take money to blow it in a bar. So you can't just equal out the cash value and walk away. There's no revach beta then. Avalizvune, maybe to sell, lo. We never gave rights to a man to walk off with the cash. That's the last thing we want to put into a male's hands is cash.
When they say the Baal can eat the peirot, does it mean the whole family can eat the peirot?
It means whatever normally. No, it's his, but obviously if he's bringing peirot to the home, it's a different kind of home.
So
it's his. Technically, it's his. I mean, he wants to say, I don't want to feed you. I mean, he could say that too. Let him feed her by buying it in the supermarket. But the bottom line is, it's obviously going to be a better home if he doesn't have to go to the supermarket. He's chayav to bezonos anyway. So Yehuda Mar Bar Marimar quotes Rava as saying, Nasha Asa Asui, look, he owns it, he sold it. Whereas Rav Papa Amar Mishmei Rava, Rav Papa says, that's not what Rava said at all. What Rava actually said was, Lo Asa Valoklo. The Baal has no rights to a sale. Omer Rav Papa, when Rav Papa heard what Yehuda Mar Bar Marimar quoted Rava as saying, that a Baal actually can sell that field, he said he made a terrible mistake. And the truth is, he wasn't even misquoting Rava. Rava never, he didn't even hear Rava say anything about it. He saw a psak halacha of Rava in court, and he jumped to a conclusion, which was a mistaken conclusion based on insufficient data. Now here's, I'm telling you, this is what actually happened. He didn't quote Rava, lot the Feirish Itma. He wasn't really saying over what it was that Rava had said. Elamichalala Itma. He was only saying what conclusion he had been led to by watching Rava's psak. The Ayyitta, what happened was there was a woman who came into court in Rava's bezin, and she had been Ayla Lalagavra Tarte Amhata. Listen, I mean, you want to talk about rotten men. This woman comes into the marriage, and she's bringing in two well-trained maids. What does this guy do? He says, two maids? What are we going to do with two maids? I'll marry another woman. We'll use one maid for the other one. So what does he do? Also, Garva Nasim Itafrita. He goes in and marries another woman. And he tells this other woman, come into my house, my house, my house. I got an extra shifa for you. This is great. So, and he gives one of the shvachot. Ayalach adaminayim. He gives one of the shvachot to this other woman. Of course, his first wife is outraged. So she sues him. The case comes to Rava's best. Also, the kami to Rava. Tzofcha, and she is shouting, and said, what kind of business is this? And I was machlis in the shivcha in order that we should have a different guy. What? No, Ashkev, but now Rava's paying no attention to her. He's saying, look, you know, look, the legalities, I understand your feelings, but sorry. Pays no attention to her timings. Now, the man who was watching, and I'm referring to Marbar Marema, who doesn't know what he's talking about, but the man de Chaza, the one who watched the proceedings so far, he thought, now, why is Rava not paying any attention to the dispensation of the Shivka? Must be because, Bishon de Sava, because Rava holds, it's no different than selling it, right? He basically has sold the rights to the work of this Shivka for the other woman. I mean, see, he can do that. So legally, he's got the right to do that, right? So therefore, he went ahead and he quoted Rava as saying, Masha Asa Atsui. But he's wrong. He jumped to conclusions. That was not Rava's svara. In fact, if the guy had sold the shivka to the next door neighbor, of course he can't sell the shivka because he doesn't own the shivka, but he had made a deal with the next door neighbor, look, you pay me $10,000 in advance, you'll get to use the shivka for the next 5 years. Rava would have said, no way. Can't sell it. So why is this any different? I'll tell you, says Rapapa, why it's different. The truth was, Valori, the truth was that the only problem, remember, that we had was perhaps Chazal did not give you the right to sell because the reason that we gave you the rights to the property was only Mishum Revach Beta. We wanted the house to be in a better condition. V'akarafcha. In this case, the shivcha is working in the same home. So you're saying she's taking orders from the other woman. That's not the point. Is it a home with two maids? Yes. There's Revach Beta. So in that case, you can't say it's a violation of the original giving over the perot. But if he would have sold it to the next door neighbor, I say, says Rav Papa, Rav Papa never would have allowed it, because he certainly does not have straight out financial rights to the shifta. The halacha l'maisa is, Hilchata, Baal Shemachar Kakala Perot, Lo Asav Lo Klum. The bottom line is that he does not have the right to sell. But why he doesn't have the right to sell may be more complicated than what we thought. We know one reason why. The one reason was the one that we discussed openly when we asked the question. And that is, perhaps the takana is only Mishum Revach Beta, correct? But if you think about it, there is another reason which may make differences. Mahalak, as we'll see, there's another reason why we may understand that Chazal did not give a husband the rights to sell his Swiss to the parents. And what would that other reason be? My taima, Abaya Omar, Abaya says a whole different reason over here. And that is Chayshinan Shema Tachsif. We are afraid that a buyer, see, the guy buys the field for 3 years, the rights to the Paris. He is definitely a corporate raider, the buyer. So he, I mean, of course the Baal is going to say to him, look, I mean, it's only on the understanding that you take decent care of this field. I want you to fertilize it every year. I mean, I'm going to be getting it back.
Absolutely, sir. No problem. I take care of this all the time.
But if Lamaise, if he gives it to the other guy, there's always a chashash that the man is looking at himself. This is a great opportunity to raid the field. I'll take whatever I can out of it, and I'll give it back 3 years later, completely ruined. So therefore, we don't give the Baal the right to do such a thing, because ultimately the woman's field may get damaged. And part of what we take into consideration in giving the Baal the rights to the Peres is the idea that he will therefore feel it's good for him to invest long-term in a field that's going to ultimately produce more Peres for him. But if we let him just take his cash and get away by selling it to somebody else, what interest does the other person have in it? He's got a short-term interest, so he won't invest. That's the reason, says Abai.
Rava says, no, the reason was what we said before. It's Mishum Ravach Beta. It's because the reason that we want him to be dealing with the field is because that is good for the household in general. It'll be bringing in money, there'll be a cash flow, there'll be a payers flow, whatever the case may be.
Is there a practical difference between Rava's reason and Abaya's reason? Yes, says the Gemara. Maybe not. What difference, practically speaking, does it make whether we hold of Rava or Abaya? Ike binayu ara de makarav labeta. The mata. Suppose the field is along the road that the husband travels every day anyway. He made a deal with the buyer that he's going to take care of the field. Well, he's going to know very well if that field is not taken care of because he sees it every day. And if the person did not properly fertilize the field, he's going to sue him. So in that case, we're not afraid for the problem of Dilma Machsif, but we certainly are afraid of there's no Revach Beta, because I already cashed out for this year. So well, there's not going to be any extra money falling, going through the house. He blew it all on his visit to the pubs. So that would be one nafkamina, inami. Another nafkamina would be in a case where Baal Orisu, so over there, basically, he is now giving the Lokeach, he's taking himself care of the field, right? So this is he himself. Is the Oris. So he is giving a certain percentage of the peros to the guy who is the purchaser, but he's getting peros. Inami zuzi v'kavi b'iska. Or suppose the deal that he's making over here is, look, I don't have any money, I want to go into business with you. So the guy says, okay, you don't have any money, I'll tell you what we'll do. I'm going to give you a 50% share in my business in return for the rights to the produce of this field for the next 5 years. In that case, there's certainly Revach Beta, because what's happening over here is he's generating money. What's nafkamina, whether he's generating cucumbers and tomatoes, or whether he's generating money off of a business venture. So there, if the time is only because of Revach Beta, it's not a problem. But if the time is that we're afraid that the guy is not going to properly take care of it, so then indeed, we're going to have a problem. Continue? Or you will... Go ahead. Now remember that up until this point in the parak we have discussed what the din is of an arusa, of an esua, of money that a woman had before erusin, when she becomes an arusa, when she had money before nesuin, and she becomes an esua, does she have a right to sell? If she does sell, is it considered to be a kosher sale? And so on and so forth. Now we're moving on now to see what the relationship would be in an equivalent case where the woman is not an arusa because she married this guy. She is rather a shomeret yavam because this man's husband died, leaving her to his brother. And in this case, if she has nechasim, it's true that if he would be meyabim her, that he would in fact be the same as her husband. He would have the schuyot to her things. However, in this case, she's only a shomeret yavam. Now, even though normally an arusa we view as a partial nisuin, so we said it creates a suffix nisuin, that's because, generally speaking, it's omeid to be koneser. On a shomeret yavan, however, it's not necessarily omeid to be koneser. It could also be omeid for chalitza. Therefore, there's not the same kinyonim that he has in her things as he would have if she were an arusa. And that accounts for the difference in the halacha, as the Mishnah continues to teach us, that a shomeret yavam shenaflula nechasim, modim beit shamayu beit hilal shemocheret venotelet vekayam. Even though beit hilal, when it came to an arusa, he said that, now wait a minute, she shouldn't really sell, because after all, these are nechasim that the husband was building the marriage on, and was assuming he was going to be kinyus, was also suffering the suing. But when it comes to a shomeret yavam, even beit hilal agrees that even lechatchila, she can sell. So now, in the event of her death, we're left with a little bit of a messy situation, because the truth is, we don't know what her status is. On some level, after all, she is really meant to be married to this guy, but it didn't happen. So we have to look at her really as a suffix. She was omedet, but on the one hand, she wasn't. And we can't look at her as a real nesua. And the end we'll never know, even in a normal case, is if she would have ended up being mityabemet, would have ended up going to chalitza. So how do we deal now with the elements of her ketuvah, which consists of the ketuvah itself, the mother or matayim, the property, nifsei tzon barzel, which were taken to an assessor and replaced into her ketuvah, which the husband then dealt with, adding his own and so on, as we had earlier. And then there's the nifasim that are nifnasim v'yotzimima, coming in and out with her, otherwise known as nifsei malug, which are entirely her own, and which the husband has rights to the perot in. So the question of what we do is now a machlokas between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Says the Mishnah, Meita, if she dies, Maya asu b'ktuvata, how do we take care of her ktuvah, referring to the Manor and Matayim and the Tosefet? What do we do with the Nechasim, HaNechasim HaYotzimima? What do we do with the Nechasim Elug? We're including the Nechasim Tzon Barzel together with the ktuvata, because they're written in the ktuvah. So Beit Shammai, Amrin Yachloku Yoshe HaBal and Yoshe HaAv. Basically, since it's a suffix, we should split it. And they each will take half. Now, this is a little bit strange, because, I mean, after all, the Mona and Matayim, I mean, why would they possibly split that? I mean, that never left the Rishos of the Baal. He never had to pay it. And she was Omedes for Yibum. And indeed, the Gemara Yivomis comes out that we are not referring to that, even though we started off with Biktuvata. We started talking about the Gemara, and then basically dropped that topic. So that definitely will not be splitting up. But what is very strange is, as the Gemara points out there in Yevamos, I mean, why is it that when she found Nechasim coming her way through Yerusha, through Matana, we started off by the Mishnah saying that it's totally hers, she can sell it, even Lechatchila, the husband has no chelik in it, and now suddenly that she died, there seems to be a right to the Yerusha Abal in this Nechasim? Does that make any sense? So the Gemara over there gives three possible explanations, and there's three different mandiyomrim. So the first explanation is that the first part of our Mishnah is talking about where she fell to Yibum from the Erisin. The Seif is talking about where she fell to Yibum from a Nisuin. So when she falls through Erisin, obviously even her original husband never was Zocha, and the state of her Shomeret Yavam can't be more than that. But if she fell from the Nisuin, then already the husband has rights, and therefore the Yavam has rights. The second teretz is that the Reisha and the Seif are both talking about that she fell from a Nisuin, but in the Reisha, where she's alive, and she definitely owns at least the principle of the Nechasim, so then her Chazok is stronger than the husband's Suffolk, that maybe she will die. But on the other hand, after her death, where there's also, after she dies, where the Suffolk is on the actual Karen itself as well now, so then they can split it. Or according to Beis Hillel, we'll see, we go according to whoever is mochzik in it. Now, the third explanation is that the Reisha, the Mishnah is talking about where she got the Nechasim as a Shomeret Yavam. And as a Shomeret Yavam, there were no rights at all. But the Seif is talking about that she inherited this Nechasim while her husband was still alive, and then her husband did get rights to it, in which case, now that she has, because they're in the possession of the Yorshim. Okay. Where's Beit Hillel, Omri? Beit Hillel, Omri, Nechasim, Bechazkatan. Now, Rashi learns this means Nechasim, meaning the Nechzeitzon Barzel are in the chazaka that they are supposed to be in. Now that itself, as Rashi points out, is something of a question that the Gemara has, deals with in Baba Basra, because there's two ways of looking at it. I mean, they are hers in that sense. It should be her chazaka on her property. He just has the guarantee on them. He could have done whatever he wants with them. But on the other hand, that kind of guarantee is actually the ultimate chazaka, somebody who's got the right to use it. So this is a question in the Baba Basra, and that's the dispensation of Nechzitzon Barza. The Ketuvah, which refers in this case to the Mona, or the Motayim, and the Tosefet in the Ketuvah, that goes to Cheskat Yoshe HaBaal, who after all, he never left his Rishos, it was always just a lien that she had, but was never actualized. And then the Nechasim, Nechasim Yotzimim, the Nechasim Alug, well, those were hers all along, you only had rights to eat the production of it, and they, of course, are Cheskat Yoshe HaAv, they go to her heirs, and her heirs means her father, if her father's alive, or her father's children, if her father's not alive, or grandchildren, if the sons are not alive, and so on, just like any other Yerusha. That's where Rashi learns. Now, there are all alternative readings over here in which the words Nechasim would mean Nechasim Becheskatam is a general statement. All the Nechasim are in the Chazaka as follows. So it would not be referring to
these nechassim at all. In other words, it's saying nechassim a shayach to have their shayach. The ktuva, which is cheskat yorshei abal shayach to him. Nechassim elug is becheskat yorshei av. And according to this, some would say that the ktuva once again includes the nechassim tzon baraza, depending on that approach in the Gemara and Yavam. Now, getting to back to a regular case. Shomer is Yavam, where the brother died leaving cash. The brother who is alive says, aha, I am the heir. So I wish to use this cash to take a trip to Hawaii. We tell him, no way, sir, because, as we'll see later, this part of the Mishnah is going Aliba the sheep of Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Meir holds that even cash and even mitzaltelin are mishubadim for the collection of her ketuvah. Since a Yavam does not write his own ketuvah, and her entire ketuvah is due her from the original husband, as we will see later, a Yavam cannot get rid of any of the things that are mishubat for her ketuvah. Now, even though normally a husband is able to sell property, and property is certainly mishubat for a ketuvah, whether you hold of Rabbi Meir or you hold of the Rabbanan, only machlokes is whether even metatavim are mishubat in the ketuvah. But certainly real estate is mishubat in the ketuvah. A regular husband can sell that real estate. So how is she going to collect a ketuvah? She'll go and she'll take it away from the buyer if there's no money to pay her when the husband dies or the husband divorces her. That's a regular lien. She can't say, well, it's lien to me, you can't sell it. I can always sell a property with a lien if the buyer understands there's a lien on the property and they'll come back to me and sue me or whatever. But certainly there's no isser in me to sell it. When it comes to a yavam, there's an actual isser for him to sell the things that were there in the lifetime of his brother that were meshubet to the ktuvah. We'll see later on why. But in any event, since there is such a halacha, if you hold, according to Rabbi Meir, that metaltelin, or cash, are meshubat to her ketuvah, then this cash is basically meant to be leaned to her. And he can't take it and go to Hawaii. So therefore, what can he do with it? The only thing he can do with it is buy property. Buys property, then he can get value out of this cash. If he generates something on it, he can get something out of it. Sorry. Okay, so therefore what he can do is he can get benefit out of this money by buying karka, and then if he buys karka, he's like her husband, would be able to eat now the pears of the karka. And so you call kachbam karka, and who will kill perot? If, let's say, that his brother died leaving him bushels of perot that had already been harvested. So they're tlushim in a karka, again, he's got to sell those perot, and he buys karka, because according to Rabbi Meir, those perot are metaltelin, and metaltelin are meshubadim for her collection of her ketuvah. How about if they are mechubarim, the karka, if the perot are connected to the ground? So just like Rabbi Meir said before, shamin notam, kama in yafim be perot, kama yafa belo perot. Basically, you look at the property, and you say, okay, how much, you say shamin otam, how much is this piece of property worth to a buyer when it's filled with all these lovely fruits, and he's going to be able to buy a property that has these fruits on it? And how much would it be worth if the trees were bare? And that difference is his cash value that needs to be reinvested in additional property, which he's now again going to be able to work and use the perot, but which is also mishu'ubad to her ketuvah, right? So hamotar, the difference between those two values, yu'akach b'am karka v'hu ochel perot, again you'd buy property and he eats it. The chachomim disagree, because they say, it's true that the property is mishu'ubad to her ketuvah and he has no right to sell, but that's only real estate. Chattel or cash is not mishubat to ketuvah. It's a fundamental machlokas, Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. Of course, nowadays we have a new takana that even chattel is mishubat for ketuvah. But here we're talking about before that takanat ha-geonim. So therefore, say the Chachamim, look, if the perot are mechubarim bekarka, so then they're shalof. Now, the truth is, we're going to see whether that makes any sense. I mean, why in the world would the perot are mechubarim bekarka be shalof? If we just said that everything is really meshubah to her. And actually, the Gemara is going to change the girsa in the Mishnah here. But we'll talk about it when we get to that piece of Gemara. So the perot ha-mechubarim l'karka shalot, ha-tlushin min ha-karka. Now here we have an interesting thing. We've got bushels of perot. These are metaltelin. She's a shomeret yavam. She says, look, man, I want to make sure that I'm going to collect my ketuvah. I don't trust these guys. So if she goes ahead before anybody else gets a chance to take these bushels of fruit, and she says, I want these bushels of fruit to ensure my ketuvah, then that's called tvisa. If she is tofeset, somebody owes you money, and you go ahead and you grab money from his house, even though maybe this cash wasn't meshubah to you, but he can't take it away from you. So if she grabbed it and collected her ketuvah, so to speak, so in that case, then she was actually zacha b'hem. If she was zacha b'hem, so now he can't take this cash anymore, and now move to Hawaii or take his trip to Hawaii, even according to the Chachamim. But if he grabbed it first, so then already that means he can go fly to Hawaii. Because he says, I'm a Yoresh. What's the problem? We owe her a ketuvah? This is cash. Cash is not meshubet for a ketuvah. The real estate I won't sell, but the cash I've been dreaming of Hawaii. Why can't I buy a ticket? So I know Hinami, if he's tofes the cash, he can go ahead and buy a ticket. If she was tofes at the cash, what we do is, of course, well, once again, buy karka, so he'll be able to use the payroad. But he can no longer use the cash because she was tofes.
Exchange say, here's the karka, it's supposed to be...
No, no, we'll see that he cannot free up anything. That's the very next piece of the Mishnah. So Kodma, he, if she grabs it first, yilakarkam karka v'ochel peros. Once he goes ahead and he actually marries her, kamsa, he's miyabim her, so at that point she becomes like any other wife, except for one crucial difference. Arei ki ishto l'chol davar, but, and when we say l'chol davar, we mean even in terms of the halach of iser, so that he can divorce her without giving her chalitza. Did you check the thermometer? Did you check the thermometer, and did you use the hot water, or did you go and buy with good Jewish money all of this expensive tea from downstairs? The kitchen is activated v'koi. Okay. Thank you.
Supporting the local economy.
I did too. I hope everything's okay. Good. All right. So in that case, we buy property. After he marries her, she's his wife even for his sir. He can divorce her. He doesn't have to give her chalitza. He's allowed to marry her back, and she does not become any more an erev on him. But the crucial difference is that Bilvad should take ketuvah down, let's say, Baal HaRishon. Her ketuvah, however, is taken only from her first husband's property. He does not rewrite her ketuvah. But Lo Yomar, he cannot say to her, La, harei ketuvatech munachat al hashulchan. I want to free up the lien, as Rabbi Yaakov just asked. I want to free up the lien on the property so that I can sell some of this property and we can open up a business. Here, we'll put aside cash right here on the table. Of course, the table is another word for bank. Banker. Right? A shulchani is a banker. So here is the money. Here's your bank account. If there's a divorce or anything, you know, it's all paid up. Can't do that. And there's nothing, no way for him to be able to free up the lien on this property. Everything that he owns is going to be now leaned, of course, only that he owns through the original husband, and are going to be achroin for the ketuvah. And the truth is, v'chein lo yomar adam le'ishto, this is not only true about a yavam and a yavama, no man shall say to his wife, harei ketuvatech munachat al ha'shulchan, here's the money, here's the cash for your ketuvah. Rather, kol nechasav achrayin l'ketuvata, in fact, everything that a guy owns is v'shuvat l'ketuvah. Now, we'll see later on in the Gemara that even though the Mishnah seems to be equating these two cases, they are not equal. Because when it comes to the Yavam, he's not allowed to sell and not able to sell. When it comes to a regular husband, this is just an Eitz Tova. It doesn't prevent him from selling. It's an Eitz Tova because it's a bad idea to set aside money, cash, for anything. Something can happen to the cash, loses its value, whatever. Don't sit here and try to translate something that's valuable, could be generating cash, by stuffing it under the mattress. So here we're giving him an Eitz HaTovah. Or another approach to the Eitz HaTovah. This is his approach. It's an Eitz HaTovah because it's a bad idea to make divorce easy. Once you've already set aside the money, and it's not going to cost you anything, it's not a good idea. If you know you're going to be banging your head in court for a few years, you'll think it over carefully. But if you think it's all arranged, then it's a bad idea. Okay, but that's a very big difference, even though the language is the same. A regular husband is able to sell. Now going back to the case of the Yavam, Girsha, once he divorces her, at that point he's in good shape. Because before, he had $30 million that he wasn't able to translate into cash. If he divorces her, all he has to do is pay out the crummy 200 zuz, whatever the tosefet was, give her the guaranteed value on her assessed property, and now he takes the rest of the $29,950,000, and it's great. As a matter of fact, the Gemara says, maybe that's not a bad idea. That's what we'll see later on today. And if that's the only eitzah to free up the property, that's what we're going to have to do. But, he could always divorce her, take her right back. But meanwhile, he gets rid of the lien.
Can't he set aside the...
That's what we just said. No, you're so busy buying me tea that you didn't listen to the Mishnah. He can't set aside.
Part of it.
No. He cannot set aside payment for a ketuvah. Period. Okay. So, and as a matter of fact, we say to every woman, every man, not to set aside, but there it's an Eitz HaTovah, here it's an actual halacha.
So here, Gzira, if he remarries her, Arei Kechol Anashim Vein La Lektuva Bavach, she's like any other woman that he took back, it's mutter, but just like every woman that we take back, the assumption is that if he hasn't paid out the Ketuva yet, that his das is Aldat Ketuva Rishona, and he doesn't write her a new Ketuva, so too, in this case, her Ketuva is back to the way it was, on the original property of her first husband, and he doesn't rewrite her Ketuva. Ve'in La Ketuva Bavach.